We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello out there in archaeology podcast land. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel. I'm the president and founder of the California Rock Art Foundation. And what we do is we identify, evaluate, manage, and conserve rock art both in Alta California and in Baja California. We conduct field trips, we have trainings, exercise, we do research, and in every way possible, we try to preserve, protect, and coordinate treasures of Alta and Baja California rock art, of which there are many and diverse. We also work closely with Native Americans and partner with them to recognize and protect sacred sites. So for more info about the fabulous California Rock Art Foundation, you can go to carockart.org. Also, I'm open to give me a call, 805-312-2261. We would welcome sponsorship or underwriting, helping us to defray the costs of our podcasts, and also membership in California Rock Art Foundation. And of course, donations, since we are a 501c3 nonprofit scientific and educational corporation. God bless everyone out there in podcast land.
You're listening to the Rock Art Podcast. Join us every week for fascinating tales of rock art, adventure, and archaeology. Find our contact info in the show notes and send us your suggestions.
Welcome to episode 29, all you rock art fans and Archaeology Podcast Network listeners. This is Dr. Alan Garfinkel, and in this episode, we're going to be interviewing Dr. Arthur Cushman, who's a neuroscientist, a neurosurgeon, and someone who is specialized in ethnomedicine and integrative science and has experienced quite a series of transformations in his life. Come on and listen. Welcome out there, all you listeners of the Archaeology Podcast Network. This is your host, Dr. Alan Garfinkel. This is the 29th episode of your Rock Art Podcast, and we are absolutely blessed and honored to have a medical doctor, Dr. Arthur Cushman, hailing all the way from Tennessee, who has an extensive background really in neuroscience and also in the study of ethnomedicine of the indigenous, the Native American people, and the nature of the relationships that has to rock art, cosmology, and artistry. Dr. Cushman, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Well, it's an honor and a blessing to have you. We had talked about doing this for quite a while, haven't we?
Yes.
Yes. And so the way we open this up, the million-dollar question, of course, the one that we start with in this interview, is if you could share with our listeners kind of your story of how you became interested in the study of Native people, the study of perhaps neuroscience and ethnomedicine, and your journey to perhaps anthropology, archaeology, and even Native American rock art. And with that, I'll give you a platform to start.
I'm a board-certified neurosurgeon where I grew up near little small town called La Sierra, California. Our house was up against a hill with large granite boulders, and right across the street there was a large pictograph of a cross with dots on each side and also some other things, and we found artifacts, little celts and arrowheads and other things in the area.
And where was this? What part of the country was this in?
La Sierra, California. It's a suburb of Riverside.
Oh, La Sierra, California. Oh, okay.
And my father was a professor of physics and mathematics, but he also was very interested in archaeology and nature in general. He also studied quantum mechanics at University of Southern California, and he worked out at the place called the Integraton near Landers or Joshua Tree, California, where they were working on project for time travel and rejuvenation that was ended up being shut down. When we went out to the desert and to the mountains near Idlewild, I'd beg him to take me to rock art sites when I was a small boy. One of his best friends was he called him at times a Paiute Indian and at other times a Chimiwawa Indian, which I think the Chimiwawa or Kemawevi are actually southern Paiutes, and they taught him many mystical and unusual things about how to sense the presence of animals and how to connect with the past. When I was in college, I spent a summer working for Dow Chemical Company in Chiapas, Mexico, collecting medicinal plants. I was their Spanish translator, and we went into small villages, and we would pay the local curandero or curandera to take us and show us the various plants that they use for medicines, and we'd put them in bags and take them up to an oven high in the Sierra Madre Mountains, where we dried them and then sent them off. Anyway, I became interested in ethnobiology at that time. I had a stomach ache. We had really nothing to take for it, so I went into a boutique and asked the curandera if she had something for a stomach ache. She looked at me and she said, "No, we don't have anything for stomach ache, but we have something for you." She said, "Stand there, hold your arms out." So she looked at me. I felt very odd. And then I saw her looking at all of these jars of plants and bags of plants. And then I saw her stop, and she took some dried leaves out, wrapped them up in a newspaper, and gave them to me. And I, of course, being a curious university student, I asked her, I said, "Well, how did you know which one to use?" And she said, "Well, the spirits told me." And I said, "Well, how did they tell you?" And she said, "Well, I saw a light around the plant that you're to take." And I said, "That's amazing." And I said, "Well, what do you do if somebody comes in and are sick and you don't see any plants light up?" She said, "Well," she said, "then the spirits may guide me out into the desert or to the mountains until we find the proper plant." She said, "In the Bible, it's called the Shekinah light. We follow the Shekinah light until it comes to the plants. Then we sit down and talk to the plants and ask them if they're the correct plant. If they say yes, can we use you? And they may say yes, or they may say, 'No, I'm the only plant in this area, but if you go follow the light more, we'll show you some plants you can use.'" And then they ask the plants, "Do you use the leaves, the roots, the stem, the flowers, seeds, or whatever?" And the plant will tell them exactly what they need to use. And then we put it in a little bag, but we make sure that we preserve the plant as much as possible. So I said, "Well, what do you do if you go and you don't find any plants, or you aren't showing anything?" She laughed and she said, "The other doctor, the botanist with you, already told me you're going to go to medical school." And she said, "When we see that happen, we know you need to go to Tuxtla Gutierrez, the capital of Chiapas, and see a medical doctor, because you have something wrong, like a large abscess or tumor or a broken bone that we can't set." And so I said, "Well, that's great." So then I became interested in that, and more than that.
Where did you go to school?
I attended high school at Thunderbird Academy, a boarding school in Scottsdale, Arizona, where I met a number of Native American friends. Then I went to La Sierra College, now La Sierra University, and then I went to University of Southern California, Los Angeles County Medical Center for my internship, and then I took my neurosurgery at Loma Linda University in Loma Linda, California.
How was that experience of being in a conventional medical situation and learning the sort of Western practice of science? How did you feel about that vis-a-vis your pre-existing associations with Native people? I'm sure there must have been some disjunction there, some, you know, sort of misalignment.
Some people think there is, but I'm what I guess you'd call an integrative doctor, and I've always felt that the old ways of healing and herbs and laying on of hands and prayer and modern medicines and surgery all work together and that should not be separated. The separation's artificial. That medical doctors often treat diseases. They cure it, but they don't heal it. The healing requires that the mind, the body, the spirit, and the soul, and everything be healed together and not just taking a pill or having an operation. You need to work on the whole person.
And did you begin in practice in that fashion in a much more integrative way, or did you practice a more conventional medicine?
I practice pretty much standard medicine, but I always believed in prayer and laying on of hands, and I also knew a number of herbal treatments and other things, and just basically encouraging people and talking to them and finding out what's going on with them, which isn't exactly the way medicine and surgery are frequently taught.
So did you have a practice of medicine initially in California, or did you migrate somewhere
else?
No,
I went immediately to Tennessee. California was having I had six different offers in California, and then they had a malpractice crisis in which no new doctors could get insurance. So I knew I had to go someplace else. So I had a stepbrother practicing in Nashville. I went to Nashville and taught to them at Vanderbilt and so forth, and I was accepted in the Nashville area with open arms.
That's great. So when you began your practice in Nashville, what area of medicine? You talked about neurosurgery at some point, and I think I always talk about neuroscience. What exactly were you engaged in, and how did that lead you on into sort of the more integrative and more ethnomedicine and cognitive neuroscience and rock art elements, you know, where I sort of found you and connected with you, I presume much later in life. But I know that when we first met, and I know you had some great interest and brought one of your colleagues with you, we had some great conversations and have sort of followed each other's research tracks, as it were.
Well, I just started out just doing surgeries and evaluating people, treating trauma victims in the hospital and so forth. And then something bad happened. I fell in the operating room. The floor was slippery and I injured both hands, requiring surgery on my hands and also on my shoulder, and which essentially put me out of doing much in the way of surgery. So I just started mainly evaluating patients, and I noticed this large black spot on my abdomen, and I had it biopsied, and later a wide excision and lymph node dissection. Anyway, I had metastatic malignant melanoma, and they did scans on my brain, lungs, liver, abdomen, all over. I spent about a week or more at Vanderbilt getting every kind of test known to God and man. And then they came and they said, well, we're sorry, you have metastatic malignant melanoma, and there is no treatment for it.
Let's stop there. I know we're developing a cliffhanger for this, but we're pretty much filled with that first segment, and I can't wait to find out how this continues and what particular experiences you've had. See you on the flip-flop, gang.
Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high-quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R. Zencastr allows us to record high-quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months or go to zencastr.com and use the code ROCKART. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Rock Art Podcast. We had a bit of a cliffhanger in the first segment. We have Dr. Arthur Cushman with us, who's a neurosurgeon, neuroscientist, and ethnomedicine expert. And he was talking about sort of a cataclysmic situation he was in. Can you reframe that for our listeners here and tell them what situation you were in?
Anyway, I had what many people call the dark night of the soul. I fell in the operating room, badly injuring both hands and my shoulder, and had several surgeries on them. I then noticed a big black spot on my abdomen. I had several surgeries for that. Anyway, so I mentioned before I had metastatic malignant melanoma, and the scan showed that it was widespread in my body, and I was told, well, you just need to probably go down and rent a house on the beach and sit in a chair and read some books until you die. And I said, well, you know, I'm not ready to die. So I saw a advertisement for a alternative healing and shamanic healing course in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And so I said, well, I have nothing else to try. Why don't I go to that? And so I went there, where I met Dr. Alberto Bioldo, has a PhD in anthropology. And when he went to South America, he learned their healing methods and found that they worked. So I talked to him, and he said, you need to join me down in the jungles of Peru and have a healing with probably the most potent medicine in the world. It's called ayahuasca. So I was very, very leery about that. I said, well, what do I have to lose? So I bought a ticket, went down to Lima, and then over to this place called Puerto Maldonado on the Madre de Dios River, which is a branch of the Amazon. Then we went on a launch. They called it a launch for hours. And then I went, and I was so weak at this time, it took several people to help me up the steps to a lodge that was above the river. The river was about a mile wide. On the second night there, I went over and had the ayahuasca, and that's a very long story. But anyway, I had a miraculous vision in which angels came down from the heavens and put their hands on me like a healing, and I felt like a loud shock. And then I had a near-death experience in which I went into this nothingness, or la nada, as they call it in Spanish, and then saw this beautiful land, and Jesus was, Archangel Michael was standing on one side of this beautiful land. My parents were on the other side, and Jesus and my grandparents, and on the other side was Mary, and I could see her heart beating in her chest. Michael held his sword down, And Mary held her hand out, and they told me I must return to Earth. So I said, no. I said, I'm tired of this. I want to go there with Daddy and with my father and mother and all my relatives and all that beautiful land. Please don't send me back. And I said, well, you're going back. So I went back and came back into my body with a big plop. And then these little midget things came out with sticks and they beat me. And they said, you're full of crap. And they said, that's your ego. You've got to give that up. And they said, you are to be a bridge person between the world of traditional medicine and the world of mystical medicine and healing. So after that, I went and studied there for a while with the Carol, Q-U-E apostrophe R-O, that in Peru. And then I also, by mysterious methods, I ended up with Tata Kachora. He's also known as Don Juan. He's now 106. He'll be 107 in a couple of weeks. He was Carlos Castaneda's teacher and probably the greatest herbalist in the world. I began studying with him and with he's a Yaqui. His grandfather was a Geronimo, and his mother was a Lacandon Maya from Chiapas, Mexico. Anyway, I found that I could communicate with him telepathically. He introduced me to the local Kumeyaay people, who you have met, one Marta, and they began to take me to their sacred sites and ceremonies, and particularly their rock art sites.
How did you meet Marta?
She was down there in Baja California at Tata Kachora, is what they call dance or ceremonial dances that they had. I met several other people, and then we went down to central Mexico, where I met the Nahua people, and they also took me to their sacred sites and ceremonies. And then I guess when we're ready, I'll explain some of the things about what they taught me about rock art and sacred sites, and how you could actually visit them and by going back in time.
Let's jump for a second back to your circumstances. The conventional doctors basically gave you a death sentence. And did you have to? Did you go back and then be retested to ensure that you in fact were healed? And what did they say once you tell us that part of the story? I think that's important.
Well, you might not want to hear it, but they said what you had nothing to do with those healings. That's a bunch of garbage, rubbish. You had what's called a spontaneous remission. We don't know what causes spontaneous remissions, but we can certainly tell you it had nothing to do with taking that weird hallucinogen down in Peru or having other healings by other people. And I just
So they were just saying,
you're wrong. I know exactly when I was healed. Oh, and by the way, 3 days after the healing, I went up high into the Andes Mountains where I climbed a 3,000-foot peak to a sacred site. They were really worried about me, and they sent a man with oxygen, which I didn't need. But a few days before that, I was unable to barely walk without help, so... you know, that's what we call us a miracle or something that can't be explained. And they of course didn't want to believe it. They said,
want to hear that, of course, but I think definitionally by even conventional medical science, what you experienced is a supernatural experience and a miracle that you went from being given a death sentence and having cancer all over your body and instant and I figure, fairly instantaneously healed. Have you had any negative consequences after this from the...
No, in fact, I have... There's a specific enzyme called LDH or lactic dehydrogenase that is elevated with metastatic malignant melanomas. My levels went from so high they were basically unmeasurable to low normal range, which have remained for the last 14 years. And also all my scans, everything. All I had was a chest x-ray, and it showed that everything was gone. So I said, just everything let it be. I'm not going to go have thousands of dollars worth of scans because I already know I'm healed.
So you experienced ayahuasca. I guess that people say it's one of the more powerful hallucinogens or ethno-pharmacological elements to create altered states of consciousness. Do you agree on that? Is that considered to be?
Oh, I agree, but I agree that in my case it was necessary and it was probably planned for me. But I do not encourage people just to go take it to have a nice trip or because they have a lot of emotional problems or all messed up. I have one friend that's had 18 ayahuasca trips and he's still a messed up mentally as ever. In other words, you should ask for guidance with this sort of thing. And if you're guided to do it, yes. If you're not, or if you're taking it for a party, as Tata Kachora said, if you play with medicines, you're playing with a dark serpent. The serpent may bite you and kill you. If you use it correctly, it will heal you, but you only need to use things like that if the Great Spirit or God or Creator guides you to use it. It's not something to be going down and having a big ayahuasca party down in the jungle someplace.
So I think what you're saying is you have to be properly postured. You have to have the right consciousness, the right perspective, a heavy dose of humility, and have an understanding and appreciation of what you're doing and why you're doing it, and have a circumstance that is desirous of that kind of experience. Am I at all correct?
Absolutely correct.
Okay. So you had these experiences, you met quite a variety of curanderas, shamans, Native American doctors, and individuals who are healers or people that have practiced in the supernatural and altered states of consciousness. Where did that lead you? How did you segue, or where did you go next from that sort of intensive experience? You've obviously had an amazing transformation in your life, you know, sort of being pulled from the jaws of death, and in turn, being recreated, if you were, transformed by the power of the alternative therapies of Native people. What implications does that did that have on your life?
Well, of course, I could no longer do surgery, so I do now. I try to do education, and I try to do help people. I do healings if I'm called to do them. I don't charge for them, and I don't solicit them. People come to me, basically come to me out of the blue. I think they're guided by a spirit to come.
Okay. And I presume you have a shingle, a business. You had alluded to that in the past, that you set up some sort of an alternative kind of, therapeutic entity to help people, right?
Right.
And what was that exactly?
It's called Quantum Neuroscience Center.
Okay. And what does that do?
We work with people to heal them in whatever way is necessary. Some people require prescription medicines for their problems, and some people herbs, and some people just need a change of lifestyle.
Okay. And you help all kinds of people with all kinds of problems, do you?
Yes.
Okay. And how do people hear about you?
Just word of mouth.
Okay. Fascinating.
I do know it. Zero advertising.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful, Dr. Cushman. I mean, that's a fantastic practice. We're almost through with the second segment. Maybe in this next segment, we can drill down to some of the things and perspectives you have on Native American rock art and how your experiences with healing and working with the medicinal experts, the ethnomedicine and the shamans, relates back to rock art. See you in the flip-flop, gang.
You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our Tee Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show.
Welcome back all to the Rock Art Podcast. This is the third and final segment in our hour-long production. We're blessed and honored to have Dr. Arthur Cushman, who's a cognitive neuroscientist and neurosurgeon, specialist in ethnomedicine, and has a fascinating life story. And I think in this last segment, we're going to try to drill down and develop the relationship of rock art to all those topics that we've covered in the past two segments. Dr. Cushman, maybe you can talk a bit about the relationship of rock art to shamanism and also the medicine healers of the native people. How does that relate back to what you've been talking about in terms of the nature of healing, medicine, and some of the supernatural experiences you've described?
All right. Well, what I'm going to do is tell you an experience. I had another injury and how things worked out. I went with a doctor, Alberto Bioldo, on a camping trip in Canyon de Chelly, the Navajo Reservation in Arizona. We hiked down the old trail. I had a heavy backpack on. I had polio when I was little, so I was a little bit clumsy, and I slipped and injured my ankle to a point where I was having trouble walking. Our Navajo guide, who was a healer, I didn't know it at the time, or medicine man, he took my backpack and he helped me down the canyon to the place where we camped. So every day they went on some different trips, various places. Right next to our campground, there was some ancient ruins, and there also was a very large wall of rock art. So I hobbled over with him and with the others to the rock art panel, and he said, "Well, you better not go up to the ruins. That's another hour, so I will just stay with you, and I will teach you something about the rock art." So he said, I said, "Well, you see here, there's a group of men on horseback carrying lances, and they're accompanied by a Catholic priest holding a cross." You know, he said, "That is obviously a recording of history. There's also a large pictograph of a cow." And I laughed, and he said, "Well, that represents the arrival of cattle in the native country. And I said, "So then," he said, "there's a number of very, very old rock art petroglyphs here, and I want you to look at them with me." So I said, "The first one we're going to look at is called a spiral." I was familiar with that. It's very ubiquitous in rock art sites throughout the United States, Mexico, and the world. So I looked at it, and he said, "What do you see, my brother?" And I said, "I see a spiral." And I said, "No." He said, "You look at it, and you hold your hands up. Your hands have consent things that your eyes and brain can't. And you hold your hands up, bend at the elbow, and tell me what you see." So I did, and I said, "Wow." I said, "In three dimensions, it's a heliacal spiral like a tornado or a whirlpool. And he said, exactly. He said, but you're missing the most important thing. And I said, what? I said, well, he said, you look at it some more. You hold your hands up, put yourself in the right frame of mind, tell me what you see. And I said, it's moving. He said, absolutely. He said, it's a portal to another dimension. And he said, that's what to our people, that many of the spirals represent. They can also represent that there's water nearby or other things, but it represents a portal. And he said, this area is a pair. He said, they placed their rock art here because it's an area of very high energy. And he said, I know you can sense it because I can see it in you. And he said, when you come to rock art sites, sacred sites, you feel different. And when you look at them, you may or may not be able to tell what they mean. He said, so then he said, look at this concentric circles. So I looked at the concentric circles. However, by now I knew what was going on. So I said, yeah, I said, that's exactly the same thing as a spiral. It's three-dimensional, and you can actually see this spirals moving, and you can see that it's a portal. And then he said, look at the snake. So I held my hands up to the snake, and I said, it's moving. And he said, yes, the snake energy connects us with the Mother Earth. So I said that, and then we saw some typical, what people call shamanic vision, lots of squiggly little lines here and there. So I held my hands up to that, and I said, I see a man who's in a prayerful position. He's obviously having some kind of vision, and he's marking down what his vision is, but he doesn't want me to know what it means. And I said, you got it. That's another kind of rock art, and that's rock art that is done on a vision quest, in which the what you see has meaning, has personal meaning to the person that created the art, but it's not something that you can definitely tune into. Although if you hold up your hands, you may find yourself in his shoes, and you may be able to see or have some kind of a vague understanding of what's going on. I said, that's another important part of rock art. So I said, that's fine. And I didn't really get around much rock art until I started going down to Baja California, where the local people took me to a number of amazing rock art sites. You know, we went into a little shelter, and there's something on the ceiling, and the two ladies who are both curanderas or healers, Kumeyaay tradition, said, what do you see up there? And I said, no, I just see a blob. I said, no. They laughed and laughed, and they said, you hold up your hands, and you'll see what it is. And I said, you know, I remember something from a few years ago when I was in Canyon de Chelly. So I held up my hands, and I said, wow, I said, that's a butterfly, mariposa or papillon. And they said, yes, and they laughed and laughed. And I said, oh, look at it. I said, wow, I said, they're flapping their wings, they're moving. So I said, yes. So we, you know, looked at other things. So then I got, this is going to something really amazing. And then you can also see that a number of rock art places are actually astro-archaeological observatories where the sun shines in them at specific times of year. And I've identified three, one at Mockingbird Canyon in California, another one at Joshua Tree National Park, and another one at Baja California called Bayesita, which is really right on the border. And they all have very similar shields. The one in Mockingbird Canyon actually has a sun with a hummingbird with his beak in it, and the sun shines on it at the rising sun of the winter solstice. And there's other shields and things that the sun at the equinoxes shines on. So then I said, you know, these sites are also used for girls' puberty ceremonies and so forth. Then one of the more amazing things, I went to the geoglyphs near Needles, California, that they call the Topok Maze. And I looked at it, and part of it's been destroyed, and there also were other geoglyphs there and things. And I said, you know, we walked around, and I said, you know, you can't find any entrance. There isn't any exit. Both the Mojave and human-speaking people feel that this is the place where the spirits of the dead go, and they must find their way out of this maze. And some of them, they said, never find their way out. And others, and I said, well, I wonder what in the world this is. Then I looked up at the mountain behind it, and I saw a big arrow pointing up towards the heavens. And the person with me, the native person, saw it also. And then the whole thing turned into a gigantic, like, geodesic dome, both above and below the earth, with many, many. And I could see that clearly, that there are 9 levels that are spoken of in the Toltec, Maya, Aztec traditions. And then I could see that the exit was up above, and that the entrance was down on the bottom. It was a huge spear and multiple different pathways. You could, you know, like, if you didn't know what you're doing or whatever, or were totally lost, you could probably spend eternity wandering around in it. So I know that may sound many times beyond bizarre to use that same kind of thing. But I can assure you, everybody can't do this. And don't worry if you can't. God has given each of us different powers of observation. Some people can feel things. Some people can see things. Some people know things. And we're all given different talents. And these talents in our modern busy world with television and cell phones and this and that and other things keeping us occupied, we've lost the ability to be in contact with the supernatural. But then again, I do not think any of this is supernatural. I think it can all be explained by quantum mechanics, which basically one of the things that's been found is that the past, present, and future are all present where we are at the same time, and that time and space are an illusion, and that you can actually, by using your mind and the quantum world, you can actually go back in time. You can see what rock art means. You can see what life means. You can see many, many things, and it's up to you to explore and find out what your talents are. And you, in order to do this, the hand is the key. All of these people, everything we did, we found that if you rub your hands and hold the hands up with the elbows bent, that this somehow is like some kind of an eye that can put you in contact with the past and with the people and sites that were in the past in ways that classical Newtonian physics can't explain, but quantum mechanics is slowly explaining it. And it's basically, it's up to you to explore this and learn this.
Doctor? That's about all we have time for. I would love to. It sounds like we need another hour at least to go in deeper. But I'm honored to have taken this amazing journey with you, and it's a blessing. I could riff on the adherent posture and the nature of what you're talking about, the connection between the terrestrial and the celestial. But I'm gonna forego that and just thank you for reflecting and sharing the wonders of your life, your transformation, and some of the supernatural and ethnobotanical and cognitive neuroscience realms that you're trafficking in. I applaud you. I'm very appreciative for your perspective, and thank you for gracing our show. And
thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and I hope that what I have said will awaken your mind to other realms of possibility.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cushman. See you next week, all you rock art fans.
Thanks for listening to the Rock Art Podcast with Dr. Alan Garfinkel and Chris Webster. You can find this podcast on the educational podcast app Lyceum, Lyceum, and wherever you find podcasts. Find show notes and contact information at www.arcpodnet.com/rockart. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing this podcast with your family and friends. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV Traveling America, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.